Sports Ethos New York Knicks podcast. Andre Gallagher, another special guest, super fan, VP at Captain Pearl NYK. Give him a follow. You were in the arena last night, so tell me how it went. What was the vibe before the loss?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's never fun to lose, especially when you travel. But the vibe was great. I think everyone saw on the timeline there was a bus that went down. But, I mean, I don't know how many people could possibly fit on the bus, 15, 20, 25, whatever it is. I mean, I saw thousands of Knicks fans, thousands.
It was impressive. It really was. I didn't see that coming. I got to be honest. And you can hear them. You can hear them in that first quarter when the Knicks took that punch and threw their own back.
Yeah, fortunate enough last year to go down to Miami during the playoff game. Similar, it was even more Knicks fans, but similar idea. And then the heat just jumped on us so quickly that you never really heard the Knicks fans in the building.
Yeah.
But like you said, last night, especially, you know, being up at halftime, it was, you heard us, the presence was definitely there, and it was fun, man. It was a great time.
And you said you were a whole menace to the fans around you, huh? You had some of the nice Philly fans.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm with a 9-year-old, right? So I don't want to scare him make him worried about things he doesn't need to be worried about. So I, like, casually was trying to, like, coach him to, like, we got to behave a little bit differently, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And we were there early, and we just, you know, I made friends with the people around us, and everyone seemed to be cool. Directly next to my son was another father-son Knicks fan, and we just fanned exactly as we would in the Garden. We were loud, we were proud, we were screaming, and it was cool. We had no problems with anyone.
Wow. So, yeah, it had to be fun times right up until, obviously, that third quarter when things just ran amok. What were you thinking? What did you see out there when you were watching the Sixers rain threes one after the other, Embiid hitting, what was it, four threes in a quarter? Nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, he had four of them. I think when you play against any great player, and by the way, we could say whatever we want to say about him, and I guess we will say a lot about him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he is a great player. And when you play against a great player, you got to either limit the other people on the team and let that person go off, or figure out how to contain that person and be okay with other people going off. In that third quarter, he went off and all his teammates went off.
Right.
Like you're not going to win like that. You got to stop something. And we stopped absolutely nothing. I mean, nothing. I think it was 39 points or something like that, I think I heard.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I think it was 40. I mean, you know what? It's a fog after that first quarter, seeing Embiid yank Mitchell Robinson down. Now, here's the thing. I know that they weren't. We knew what Josh Hart said it after the game. You knew what you were going into in game three. After the way game two ended, you knew the referee, the whistles were going to heavily favor the 76ers. You knew that even in a typical game three down 2-0. So the refs had a really tough decision, and we all get it. They're not going to throw Embiid out and throw their whole season out with them in early in the game. It's a very tough decision. I get it. It's a decision that they should have made. What angered me, outside of it just being incredibly dirty, and the other dirty plays he had too, I think Hartenstein said he kicked him in the nads with the knee brace, and it was felt sharp and it was metal. So and he kicked Mitch in the nuts. Like, all of that is not going to amount to anything next game, and that's the most frustrating part about it. Is he's going to go into the next game getting every whistle the same way he got in this game. And the Knicks are not going to get it. There's not going to be any retribution because they're going to get thrown out of the game if they do anything to him. So that's the frustrating part about it. What was feeling from you and the Knicks fans in the arena after all of that went down?
Well, they had a bunch of reviews even before that. And we seemed to be on the right side of those reviews, which was interesting. So the Philly fans were, up until the Embiid play, the Philly fans were furious at the refs. You know, looking back at the timeline now, it looks like Knicks fans were upset about the refs from the jump, but the Philly fans were very upset until that Embiid play. At least all the Philly fans around me, when they saw that highlight, they all acknowledged how dirty of a play Embiid made. I mean, there's no excuse for that, right? Whether the guy should be thrown at or not, it's secondary. You can't defend his actions. I mean,
right. What are we doing?
Yeah, so that was pretty wild.
He yanked him down, and he pushed him. And he pushed him after he yanked him down so he wouldn't land on his own knee. So,
From my
which is
angle,
hilarious.
it looked like Devo stepped to him a little bit and OG got in. Again, reading the timeline this morning, it sounds like people thought that nobody got in his face. I mean, at the game,
Well,
it
that's
looked
not
like
true.
there was a little dust
No.
up. Yeah, okay, good. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
Dante, well, let's balance it. Dante got in his face. He didn't get like he wasn't like crazy about it. Because I think the Knicks are keeping their cool. I think the Knicks are playing this smart. And listen, fans are gonna be fans and oh, somebody should have knocked his head off. Like, yeah, and then get suspended and lose the series. Like, this
Yeah.
is not, what are we doing here? But you do
No,
want
I
to see
think,
people
yeah.
stand up. And Dante went and
Yes.
he said something to him. He was basically, you don't know what he was saying, but he was like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? But then OG came over and it was like he was trying to calm and be down. And I don't want to
Yeah,
jump on
I don't know.
OG, but I was like, OG, you look like you're trying to calm him down. Like, nah, that's not how this works.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. But you do got to do your talking on the court, and Devo stepped to him there, and then a little later at the end of the quarter, I mean, I'm not sure I yelled louder all night that when he dunked it on it. Well, Embiid didn't contest because he
Whew.
had fouls, but that dunk was ridiculous. Then he pushed off on Embiid, no call, made a layup, and then he hit a three after the buzzer that didn't count to finish the half. But that flurry all in Embiid's face, minutes after the dust up, like I was feeling pretty good at halftime. Not
You
gonna
had
lie, like
to. You had to.
I
You
was
had to.
very, I was feeling pretty good, and I was proud that they were able to overcome all the
Very
bullshit. We
proud.
didn't unravel after that, and we
Very
could have.
proud. And I thought halftime was going to be like the first mark. That was like the first landmark you had to get to and keep things within reason, And they did that. And you had to feel good after everything that went down. And then the next thing was the third quarter adjustments. Like, what's it going to look like after halftime? And that's when it all kind of fell apart. And I got to give Nick Nurse a little credit because what were the Knicks' struggles in the first two games? It was handling the pick and roll and the dribble handoffs and all of that stuff between Maxey and Embiid. And then they come out in the first quarter and they don't do any of it. And they just post Embiid up every single play. And then they come out in the third quarter and start doing the dribble handoffs and pick and rolls again after you figured Tibbs spent the whole halftime trying to work on the Embiid post-ups and the actions that they were doing in the first half. I have to give him a little credit for it because the Knicks made a lot of mistakes defensively. As much as Embiid was hitting the contested, some of them were contested. They were making a lot of mistakes on their switches and their discipline. It seemed like they were a little off kilter.
Yeah, I agree with you. I absolutely agree. Definitely tip their hat to their execution. You're right. He did make some contested shots, but mostly it was pretty bad defense,
Yeah, it
to
was
be
just
honest.
bad
And
D.
we made some turnovers that were bad. We weren't getting to 50-50 loose balls. I mean, again, the ref thing is real, but the ref thing wasn't a real thing in the third quarter. We went into
No.
halftime with momentum. We just totally laid an egg in that third quarter, and you're not gonna win games on, especially on the road, really anywhere, letting up, I think I said 39, you said 40. I think it was maybe 44 points. I don't know what it was, but
I think it
whatever we
was
did in that third
44.
quarter, yeah, whatever we did in that third quarter is a recipe for failure. I just if it's all right, I just wanna I got distracted. I wanna swing back. Like the whole like Embiid has been enabled and now next game there's nothing that we can do. Like I think I see it a little bit different. If we're making generalizations, like yes, the script was that the refs have to be for Philly because of the last 2 minute report, plus they want a long series, right? You got to get it back to 2-1. But what to me, the highlight reel of Embiid, the whole game, not just the Robinson play, unless you're a diehard Philly fan, no one can excuse it. Like I think the whole media and the whole league saw how ridiculous that is. In theory, we should be getting the benefit of the call next game.
In theory, I just don't think it's going to go down that way. I think it's going to, well, listen,
I don't
we
know.
don't know. We don't know. Listen, I think logic, you're right. You're 100% right. Logically, you would think it would swing back our way. But the way Embiid is called is pretty consistent game to game.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be, at the end of the day, that's what's going to be the problem because
See,
Jalen hasn't been getting calls in general.
but we don't need a whistle to beat them. Like
Okay, okay.
we lost last night because Embiid had 50 points. Yes, 21 foul shots, but how many foul shots did he have in the other games? If we don't
Right.
let Campaign go off, if we don't let Embiid make four threes in a quarter, we don't need like, I understand why the whistle is the talk, but we're the better team. We don't need the whistle. So as long as it's borderline reasonably fair, I think we'll be okay. And maybe I'm in the minority of this. I thought Jalen had a decent whistle last night. How many times did he get to the line?
We'll see that.
I don't
the
know.
Problem.
I wasn't watching the box score, so I don't know.
No, but yeah, he got to the line. I think it was 13 times, and I think it was 43 points in the third quarter. I just looked it up.
Okay.
But as Tibbs brought up in the, at the end of the game, they were all at the end.
Like, so dude, Tibbs, I mean, I could listen to Tibbs post game on
they're beautiful.
The rest of my life. I mean, I'm not saying that we don't have a real gripe. I mean, I see what everyone sees. I just, like, again, we did.
You made a great point. They don't need it. You made a great point.
You think we got
point.
A shitty whistle in the first half, right? We were still up by five.
Yeah,
so, like, we don't
great
need
point.
That. I know that's going to be the talk. We have 3 days off, which sucks. I wish we had less time off, although maybe it'll help.
Right, because you see
I wish we were back at them.
Yeah, it's the Mitch thing. Let's get into that next. But you kind of see the difference in Embiid with the 2 days off, right? Because say what you want to say about the first two games. He definitely looked lazy out there on both sides of the floor. And then he came out in this game. He just had a little bit more pep to his step. And I think part of them going to him straight post-ups in the first half might be because he was a little bit more rested in this game. And in the second half, they went more to their jump shots. It seems like there was a formula developing there. But too, like you mentioned, the Mitch injury is just, what are we going to do here? It's just walking boot after the game. I don't know if you saw the post-game stuff.
He's
in a walking boot after the game. It just doesn't seem like, and then when he is playing, let's be honest, in game one, he had a great game one, but it seemed like he's limping around a lot in these games. So it might be a thing, but how do you feel about the notion of getting, you know, let's call it prime Precious in this next game, because Precious does bring a whole different spark and he does play Embiid well. I think I was talking to DJ from Nick Film School.
Yeah,
yesterday.
I listened to that on my drive down.
Oh,
that was a great episode. Yeah,
appreciate you. Yeah, and he talked about how Precious has a lot of discipline when it comes to guarding Embiid, and he showed it yesterday. There was a big play. Yeah. There was a post up, and he was and Embiid was trying to bait him, and never got him. What do you think about Precious coming in and maybe being a hero in this rest of the series?
Yeah, you're right. He stayed down on all those pump fakes last night. I think the best version of Mitch is, I mean, probably obvious. The best version of Mitch is not comparable to Precious.
No
but
question.
But the version of Mitch in game two and last night is not that much better than Precious.
Right.
And Precious does bring a different piece to it. He didn't attempt a three last night. We don't really want him attempting threes. That's not his game. But there is a little bit more of an element of stretching the floor with him on the court. So, look, it's this team. There's no team that embodies the next man up mentality more than this team. So, you know, I feel bad for Mitch because I feel bad for Mitch.
You gotta feel bad. He's out there toughing it out for them.
Yeah, but from an X's and O's perspective, I'm not sure how big of a deal this is. The only issue is if Embiid does keep getting this whistle, if we have to, and then that's like a whole game changer. I love all my Knicks. I love Jericho, but he's not ready for this environment.
If he
has to step on the court, we're in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. And the one thing about Precious, and like you said, we don't necessarily want him shooting the threes. Like, hey, let's give you one maybe just to see if you got it. But the fact that he can put the ball on the floor for one or two dribbles with a guy like Embiid who can't really move, as long as he can look out for that reach down that they've been Philly has been killing the Knicks with their reaches when they drive by him. They've been killing them, stripping them every single time. As long as he can learn to protect that ball, that first dribble to get by Embiid, it just seems like it's smooth sailings. If he or Hartenstein decide to start turning the corner on Embiid when they're doing dribble handoffs and they're doing the off ball, they're doing screens, and Embiid has to step up just a little bit and you get hit with a pocket pass or, you know, just any action where Embiid takes a false step and they're able to turn the corner. There's nobody on that backside that can stop either one of them off that one dribble towards the basket. And I feel like that's something that Precious can do in these games coming up that I'm not going to say excited, but I kind of appreciate the fact that he's going to bring a different element to the offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Tibbs is all about trusting his guys. Precious was not in the rotation to start the playoffs, which I think is the right decision. And he came in last night and he did his job. So I think Tibbs would be very quick to go back to him. Obviously, if needed, it's nothing to talk about. But I wouldn't be completely surprised if he got some minutes, even if Mitch is able to suit up.
So you listened to the show yesterday with DJ, and we talked about, hey, if this game was close or within 10 in the fourth quarter, you're in a situation where you know that Philly, the pressure is going to hit them. Now, the Knicks didn't quite get there. They were there, but they didn't
get there. I was smiling because as you brought this up, I did think it happened. I mean, the fans around us were in a complete panic. I forget who made the bucket for the Knicks, but I think we cut it to 7. I'm sure everyone's seen the clip already with Embiid sticking his ass out in the backcourt.
Right, so if that's a foul there,
now we have the ball back. There's still a minute and a half left. Like, I definitely think they were unraveling a little bit. I forget if it was Pierce or Garnett, but it was that Celtics team, and it was when we were bad, not the good years when we used to compete against them against Melo. So after that, before the most recent years, and someone was mic'd up, and they said the Celtics were down big against the Knicks, and they were making a comeback, and one of those two made a comment like, if we could just get the game close, we know they're going to fold. And like at the time when I heard it, I was so upset, but I was upset because I knew it was true. I knew it was true. Like it was right? just true. We were going to fold. And I really I think there's some of that here. Like, I don't think Philly is like this terrible team. I think they're a good team. They're not a real 7th seed, but right now, end of game pressure, they're just not comfortable and confident. And as great as Maxey has been, and he is, dude, this guy is unbelievable, especially watching him live. It's crazy super how fast he is. It's nuts. He's making bad turnovers. He's not Brunson at that end of the game. Not to say that he won't make a clutch shot, but he's not like the floor general, I got this, guys. And Larry, if you think about it, Larry should not be a starting basketball player at this point in his career, but he's their safety blanket. That's who they're relying on to calm things down.
And scares me. That's what I need him not in the game.
I know. Well, he missed a huge foul shot in game 2.
Yeah, that's true.
He did make them both last night. I don't know if people go back and look at the replay, whatever, but his first, he switched the second one. His first one hit the front of the rim, bounced up and went in. You know, that wasn't really such a confident stroke for someone that's like a team leader and a vet. So obviously Embiid's a head case. Like Tobias Harris, like he looks like he's like, it's 6-on-4 when he's on the court. It's like he's a Knick from his Long Island days. I mean,
it's funny. I saw a Philly fan say that. He said that he called him a mole. I think he said he was a mole, and it was somebody else he called a mole on the team. And it's like, you can't help but think that when sometimes you see Tobias out there. His old talent in the world.
Oh man, he's a good player. I could actually see Knick fans, their games are different, but I could see Knick fans hating on OG in OG's last year of his contract in a similar sort of way. How's this guy getting $50 million a year and he only averages 8 points, you know, whatever. So look, the role players are gonna have an easier time dealing with the stress at home than on the road. That's just the reality of it. So I still believe what DJ said. I think it makes sense. I think it will be more true at the Garden. I think it will be true on Sunday too if the game's close.
What you want to see is because they still have a cheat code, and the cheat code is Embiid, right? The cheat code when it comes to getting a foul call is a cheat code when you can't contest that jumper as much as you want to, because when you get that close, he gets into your body and it's a whistle, right? Or he takes one quick step and now you're on his hip and you can forget about it. So they have a cheat code, and then they have a cheat code with the two-man game with Maxey. And these are two things that the Knicks have not found answers to. So that makes you nervous. But this Knicks team all year long, and I know you know it, and I forget who said this. They said they've never – oh, it was J.J. Redick. He said, I have a lot of Knicks fan friends. I've never seen them so proud of a team as they are this team.
Yeah.
And I think you would agree with that. This team all year long has never wavered. Like, they might have had a bad game, might have a bad game, might have a bad stretch because of injury, this, that, and the other. But they're at the end of the game, they've come through. They've never been shook. They've never been scared. They've always took a punch and gave punches back. And you can feel that even if they lose game four, and this turns out to be a long series. I think the only time you get nervous, you shouldn't get nervous because I think you tweeted this out. You don't think this team is a championship team. I think we know this is not a championship team. We can win. We know we can win. That's all it is. You know you can win. Even if it turns to a long series, this team is not going to be shaky. They're not going to be front runners. And you have to feel good when the game is coming close down the stretch, especially if they can find some way to make Embiid miss some shots. And they did that in the first two games, to be honest. And they didn't do it in game three.
Yeah. Look, we weren't shaky last night. I mean, Brunson made some bad turnovers.
Yeah,
late,
when it was tight, yeah.
To me, but we called tight, but we were down 6, 8, 10. Like, he was pressing to try. We needed things to happen, and he pressed and he made bad decisions. But it wasn't like down one with the ball and he dribbled off his foot or something. Like, I thought we handled the pressure. Pressure was not an issue last night at all. They made every fucking shot they took, and like, that third quarter is insane. Look, I don't want to lose to this Philly team. I'm not going to say the Philly team is better than us if right now, I believe we're a better team, and I think we should win the series. And if they score 43 points every third quarter, we're probably going to lose. Like, right. you just have to clean
at
that up.
At the end of the day.
Yeah. And that doesn't work. I, if you watch last night in that third quarter, when he was, it wasn't, forget the pick and roll wide open Embiid threes, the ones where you mentioned he just kind of is shooting over people. He's shooting over 7 foot centers, and it's like they're not there. So to me, you're much better off putting, not much better off, but you might want to experiment putting like an OG on him more.
Oh, you said it. You said it. I've been waiting.
Yeah, but the problem is, who do our centers guard?
I don't think Tobias.
Yeah, so Tobias could be an answer, but it also, I could see it happening if there were Precious minutes, because Precious guarding Tobias makes much more sense than Ihard guarding Tobias.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Excellent observation, because now you have that option.
Because if Embiid's going to score 50 points and 21 foul shots, I want it to be in a stagnant post-play offense that gets everyone else out of a rhythm. You know, for him to score all those points and to do it in the style of offense that they're trying to play, that I think was the real letdown for me. Like, if he's just going to dominate the game and take everyone else out of the flow, we probably can overcome that.
Right. I think that's excellent. I think that's one of the benefits that Precious could bring, is exactly what you just said, is that if he's out on the floor, you can switch him on just about anybody, even Maxey. Maxey's going to fly by most people in the league, including Precious, but he can stick with him as well as Dante can, and he can provide some kind of defense at the rim.
OG on Maxey makes no sense to me personally. It like completely neutralizes OG's skill set, and even if you don't want to put him on Embiid for a million different reasons, I'd put him on essentially anyone else, even a shittier player, because maybe he could ball hawk or something, but he can't contain Maxey. So, and that's not a knock on him, by the way, but
it's a screen. Yeah.
Well, and he's just so much faster. That's just not, you know,
you get him a full head of steam and you got to chase him. Right, yeah, it's tough.
And like the idea, like, okay, you can't have Brunson on him, but I mean this, like, I hope they sign. They're going to sign OG, let him get Dolan's money, let him get as much as he wants. I'm not like a contract person, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he literally is providing zero resistance against Maxey. It's not like he's providing 1% or 5% or 10%. He's providing zero resistance. So who cares who guards Maxey? We're not. And Devo, I think, has done a good job of being aggressive.
They've done the best job they could.
Yeah.
Because my whole thing on Maxey is, listen, Max, great player, blah, 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 playing great. It's much harder to guard him when you have to be so attentive to him. At the end of the day, I think the Knicks figure him out, even though he got loose in the third quarter too. In the first two games, he was.
Everyone got loose in the third quarter. We got to throw that quarter out.
Yeah. So I just feel like, as good as he is, it's all about Embiid. And if you can, like you said, if you can put OG on Embiid and just take your medicine, make him shoot over OG in his 50-foot wingspan, Make him risk putting the ball on the floor to drive by OG. Let the referees blow the whistle on one of the best defensive players in the league, who they typically give a little bit more slack to in general.
Right.
Let him do it against him. And if you are afraid of even Hartenstein getting lit up by Tobias Harris, like let it be. Let it be. Let Tobias Harris have his hero moment for a couple possessions. Yeah. If you think that that's where you're gonna lose, because I just don't think they're gonna lose with Tobias Harris attacking Hartenstein. Even if it's Hartenstein, you know, Precious is, I think we both agree. But even if it's Hartenstein, I don't think we're losing with Tobias Harris.
Yeah, look, and Precious guarding Embiid will be interesting, and I think I Hart's done a decent job. Like it's. Like, I hate talking about being at games because I get that not everyone gets to be at the games, right? But like when you're there, and I guess you see it on TV too, but like the shots that Embiid is hitting are just incredible. Like, right. I'm not talking about the open shot. Like Hart, there are times where Hart is, you know, playoff basketball, forearm shiver, double forearm shiver, pump fake, stays with him, and then Embiid somehow just makes this short yeah. jumper without even getting his feet off the ground, like Sam Perkins style.
Doesn't even jump. Oh,
yeah.
Like, and it's not like he shoots from behind his head. He's shooting in front of his
face.
It's
a push shot.
Like it's behind
yes.
his head. Yeah.
Exactly. It makes no sense. So there's no – so you could just put a smaller person on him because it's not going to actually matter. But I think ideally – OG doesn't guard Embiid. OG roams and creates havoc and gets off of Maxi. I think that's our ideal. If you're going to put him on Maxi, where I don't think he's effective, I'd rather just try him on Embiid. But if we could get a big to stay low on Embiid and we could have OG help, like he had a steal. I don't remember when it was, but OG had a steal
breakaway
at one point. Yeah. Like, you know, we were accustomed to seeing that two, three, sometimes four times in a game. That was,
right.
I think, the first time of all series that I saw it. Maybe it happened one other time at home. I'm not sure. You know, we want him in the passing lanes. We want him playing a bit more free safety. Him and Maxi just doesn't.
I think you're 100% on it. And I think part of what Nick Nurse does when Maxi and Embiid are doing a two man game is keep OG away from them on the shooter.
Yes,
and the Knicks have kind of just played into that. And You don't think Nick Nurse knows exactly what OG does?
Right.
Nick Nurse is doing everything he can to keep OG busy doing other things so he can't go up there and muck up and whatever Embiid is doing. And chasing Maxi around screens, like you said, it definitely hasn't.
Yeah, like, look, OG is a better defender than Hart. That's not a knock on Hart. OG is an incredible
right.
defender, one of the best in the league. But, like, as it relates to guarding Maxi, is there really that big of a difference? Like, he's not doing anything on Maxi. Just put someone else on him.
Yeah, and it'd be much better if Maxi's taken off with OG in help and meeting him at the rim. Because what was it? Was it the first game or the second game? There was a bunch of times where Maxi was able to turn the corner off the dribble handoff, and he's getting to the basket, and Hart was the one that was sliding over to help. And he got past Hart very easily and finished at the rim. And I was like, why isn't OG there? What is a defensive scheme that doesn't have OG at the rim and making Maxi have to finish over OG instead of Josh? No knock on Josh, because we all love Josh.
Yeah.
Now, being at the games, though, thank God you're there. Now, say what you were going to say.
No, I just – the only thing I would say is, in like, everyone fans differently. I have opinions. I'm sharing them now, but I'm definitely like overall in the camp of like these guys are the pros, they're the coaches, they know what they're doing kind of thing. What I would say is last year, Bickerstaff made a lot of changes early and I clowned them. This year, Nurse was talking about changes early and I clowned the idea of that. Like, we might see a lot of different stuff on Sunday. It really, not that we didn't want to win that game, not that it was a throwaway game. They definitely wanted to win the game, but like, it's our turn to react. So
yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see different stuff on Sunday. Just because we didn't see it in the third quarter while it was happening live doesn't mean it's not coming.
Right. And I say this all the time. Sometimes the team that lost the last game has the advantage going into the next one because they have so many things that they need to do better. Whereas the team that won can sometimes rest on their laurels and continue to do what they were doing, because that's also like a sensible approach, right? But yeah, you're right. Being at the games, you see things that you don't necessarily pick up on TV. So Don't ever hesitate to bring those observations. I tell you, the first time I saw, I was at the game when Ben Simmons was at Philly, and I saw him run full court, full speed with the ball, and it was like the fastest thing I've ever seen in my
Yeah,
life.
and then you can go on a timeline and see people talk about how Ben Simmons should be in China and he's the worst player ever. And it's like, dude, like, I get it, but also like these guys are fucking incredible, all of them. The
Right.
worst player, like Campaign sucks, dude. Campaign is
Look at the way
ridiculous.
he
His shooting
shoots.
motion. My son was clowning him. I don't know if you saw the timeline. I ended up sitting next to Devo's agent
Agent,
last
yeah, I
night,
saw that.
who happens to also be Campaign and Jericho Sims' agent.
Oh.
And so we were talking about Campaign before the game, and he predicted he was gonna have a good game. So shout out to him. If I knew his name, I would tag him. I probably could Google it, I guess. But anyway, but like Campaign did nothing in the first two games, nothing. A Buddy Hield, like, oh, he's the worst. This guy's scared to be on the court. Buddy Hield's the best fucking basketball player any of you have ever seen in your life if you met him at the court. Like, you
Yeah.
know, I get it. We're fanning and just saying things, but these guys are incredible what they do, and they are so big. Watching Hartenstein and
Oh
Embiid
my
battle up
goodness.
close, it doesn't seem like it just doesn't make sense. I don't understand how anyone has room to do anything. It's incredible.
Because a court is much smaller in person and it doesn't than it looks on TV. That was something
It's
that I think of when
very
I was a kid.
narrow.
Yeah. It's like, how do these guys move around? How do you fit through these spaces? But you look at it on TV, it looks like there's this wide open space all over the place.
So DJ, who was on your last episode, he pointed out in the last game, Brunson's three that cut the lead to two, the one that hit the front of the rim, that Brunson's feet were, he's a lefty, right? So his toes were pointing towards half court while he was shooting to the hoop and made it. And he was pointing out the fallacy that, you know, it is a fallacy that your feet have to be facing the hoop. It's not true. And then my Campaign is the most extreme example of that. But the court was designed how many years ago? What was the average size of these people? Like, these guys can't fit in the corner with their feet touching the rim, even if they wanted to. Their shoes are
You're
too
talking
big,
about
right?
size 16 to 17s.
Right.
I'm
Right. And
always
so the
amazed
court.
how they can set their feet and not look.
Yeah,
Like, that
the court
always
is
amazed
just
me.
too small for the. It's like when I play pickup and we end up getting stuck in like an elementary school gym, like, all right, fuck it, let's just go 4-on-4. Like the court is just small for these guys. It's incredible what they're able to do.
Yeah, that's it. DP, I appreciate you coming on, making time. Make sure you let us know what the vibes are this next game. You're not going to be this next game, are you?
No, I'm gonna go.
Oh, yeah, there we
My
go.
feeling was if we got up 3-0, right? I didn't want to talk about it a lot because I didn't want to count my chickens, you know, so to speak, but I would love to be able to travel next round. And so if we got to 3-0, we're likely going to win. I'll save my money. And this is going to sound crazy because, like, who am I and who are any of us? But, like, I feel like they need us on Sunday.
Yeah,
Like,
they need us.
I'll be letting them down if I don't go. So I got to go.
This team, they tell you how much we're helping them. I
Yeah.
appreciate that. Like, they will sit there and they will tell you that we help them. And you don't know, I don't know if I've ever heard players in the post game talk about it. I mean, they always say great fans, but I've never heard players talk as openly as these guys have talked. They said sometimes they're waiting to come back in games just so they can light the garden on fire. I think Josh Hart joked about that one time, man. But listen, represent the fans in the building. Thanks for coming on the show.
All
This
right,
is
well,
great
good. Thank you
stuff.
so much for having me. I appreciate it very much.
All right, man. Take care. Whew. DP said he don't worry about no whistles. We don't care about no stinking whistles. I love that, and that's what I'm talking about. You changed my whole attitude. So game four, nah. You know what? If we don't get the whistles, we don't need them. We don't need them. You got me amped out here. He's running a ball. If they don't want it, the Knicks have not gotten referee help, whistle help all year long. And here they are. And here they are. So if they just make some schematic changes and DP was on it and some of the adjustments they can make, if they can make any of those adjustments. Make the adjustments that we didn't even think of. As DP mentioned, these guys get paid a lot of money to figure these things out. They got this. They got this. Well, let's wrap this one up. DP stopping by. Make sure you give him a follow at Captain Pearl NYK, spelled all words spelled properly. Make sure you follow Old Faithful at Sports Ethos on Twitter, at Ethos Knicks, at The Watchers 7. One day, I guess, I'll stop saying Twitter and I'll start saying X. We'll see. I'll start to practice. Andre Gallagher. Until next time.